Welcome to the Bowden Blitz SEC edition. I'm Joe Lisi, joined by former National Coach of the Year, Terry Bowden. Coach, great action in week number 6 within the conference. We'll get into the games in just a few moments, but we'll take a look at the updated odds entering week number 7. There's been a little bit of a change yet again. Alabama now increases their lead on the rest of the SEC, plus 210. Fresh off their victory on Saturday afternoon against Vanderbilt, they got the win and cover in the final minute. Give me your thoughts about where Alabama is now entering week number 7, and are they, in fact, the team to beat in the SEC?
I think they put themselves back in that situation. Texas kind of eliminated itself. Georgia's working its way back up, I would say. Now we've got Ole Miss in the picture, Texas A&M in the picture. Those are the two new people. But Alabama, the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks, knocking off a very good Vanderbilt team. And I thought just physically having better football players on the field, I think they are definitely the team to beat. They've beaten Georgia. Really as talented a team as anybody in the conference. But I'm going to say this. Texas A&M may have the most complete football team with offensively 5 weapons, quarterback, 2 running back, 2 wide receivers. They may be one of those guys that has a great shot down the road. But right now it is Alabama, then Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Georgia in that order.
Yeah, we're entering week number 7, and we still have a long way to go. It seems to have changed. At least in the SEC week to week, whichever team has an upset win or potentially a dominating win, covering against the number, maybe over exceeding expectations, that always seems like the team to beat week in and week out, obviously from the odds perspective. And when we look at the board, I guess a team that we don't see is the Texas Longhorns, a team that had the number one Heisman front runner in Arch Manning, a team that had the best odds to potentially win the SEC in the preseason. They're nowhere near on this list, and that's fresh off their road loss to the Florida Gators. You can make the argument the most disappointing loss in Steve Sarkisian's tenure in Austin. I mean, Arch Manning started slow. This offense looked inconsistent. And I think a defense that was ranked in the top 20 statistically across multiple categories in FBS got abused by DJ Lagway in an offense that was only averaging, Coach, about 10 points per game heading into that matchup Saturday.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I would put Texas and Penn State in that category, but about as disappointing. You're talking about the top 2 teams in the rankings at the beginning season are not ranked. Texas, the thing that Texas, it's inexcusable, is the talent level they have. They've got talent everywhere, and offensively they have not had an explosive game yet against anybody important. They hadn't beaten a Power 4 team yet. And then Arch Manning, maybe not a fault of his own, but maybe Sarkisian went in with it. They built him up so big, or he was built up so big, he really couldn't do anything but fail. Their offensive line hasn't held up. They're not running the ball well. And Arch is not as accurate as you would like him to be on the short to intermediate passes.
I think when you look at just that performance as a whole, Coach, you know, to go on the road to a team that had basically at that particular time a lame duck head coach in Billy Napier. I mean, the rumblings and rumors around Gainesville that if Florida lost that game, there was the potential that Billy Napier might be out of a job come week number 7. He saved that with that performance. You know, both teams were coming out of a bye, so there was no excuse for Texas not to be prepared. It's just that when you look at that effort last Saturday, from a physicality perspective, it looked like Texas was back in the Big 12 as opposed to the SEC on Saturday.
We're beginning to see it more and more in the big games against the tougher competition. Texas is not playing that physical game that they ought to be playing with the talent that they have. And Florida physically whipped them. I think Florida's defense. And I always felt there was one like X factor in that game. LJ, if DJ Lagway got hot, if he exploded, because he's done that in the past, then all bets are off against Florida because their defense playing so good. He's so explosive, and they found a true freshman receiver that can make big plays. And that's the way Florida likes to play football games. A lot of skill out there at wideout and a quarterback that can hurt you if you make mistakes.
Absolutely. I think when you just look at Arch Manning again, I mean, you now we know why potentially he didn't beat out Quinn Ewers last year, right? I mean, I think when you think about Quinn Ewers and you think about that performance, obviously he stepped in games against UL Monroe and Mississippi State last year. But in the big matchups, it was Quinn Ewers under center as opposed to what we saw, you know, the past performances week one against Ohio State. And this past Saturday against Florida, I mean, you look at the statistics as a whole, Coach, they were abused across every aspect of this 60-minute ball game. I mean, Florida puts up 457 yards, and that offense at one particular time in the second half was humming against that Texas defense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They didn't have any answer for him, and Florida just kept making big play after big play. But again, when you have a championship caliber team, you can't be just good on one side of the ball. There are games where they've got an offensive system that's just clicking. They've got pitchers that are throwing strikes, and you just got to find a way to match them. And right now, Texas has just had no answers on offense against good people. They scored a lot against maybe Sam Houston, but when you're playing good people, they just haven't been able to put points on the board. And again, I know it's tough to put all that on Arch Manning. In a way, he's a quarterback. He's at Texas. You know that's what they're going to do. You either get all the credit or all the blame. That's part of it. But again, there's a lot of things offensively they've got to get fixed at Texas. They remind me a little bit of LSU and what they were supposed to have on offense and a few other teams that offensively aren't doing what they need to do.
Now, when you look at Billy Napier and you look at DJ Lagway and you saw what they were able to do against, you know, one of the better, let's say, secondaries in the conference, could that continue potentially on the road against A&M this weekend? And if they get another victory, could this team be potentially the team that we thought they would be at the start of the year? Or do you just think schedule and from what you've seen right now, last week was potentially an outlier?
I don't think it necessarily is an outlier, but I'm looking at Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Tennessee, FSU. That's the rest of their schedule. Now, you've got to play as good as you did Saturday and maybe even better every game to keep from having two or three more losses. I think they have all – they played like the Florida I think we thought they would get. Whether they can come back and win enough games there, whether Billy Napier is just kind of making it difficult on the people that have already – hoping that he would be gone. They found a way to be awful good, but it's going to be one week at a time because they have to play at the top of their game offensively and defensively to get through that schedule.
Absolutely. I agree with that as well. I think when you look at Billy Napier, definitely saved his job for potentially 1 week. I think the biggest thing is that when we look at just the defense as a whole, they potentially, Coach, could be one of the best in the country. I mean, that defense has been consistent now. In all their losses, the defense comes to play on every Saturday.
Yeah, they haven't lost a game defensively. I mean, they haven't. They were lucky to be in the game. Lagway throwing five interceptions against LSU. Defense pretty much stopped USF. Miami didn't score that much against them. It was a close three-point ball game going into the fourth quarter. And yet they settled. If they had not had their schedule, had some of the other SEC teams' schedule, we wouldn't be probably talking about them like this, but we are, and they've got to overcome it. We knew it before the season that this was going to be one of the toughest schedules in the country. Now we just got to see, take it one at a time and see how far they can go. Again, they will have to play their best football on both sides of the ball if they're going to get through that schedule with a good record.
And when we come back, we'll be breaking down Alabama's victory over Vanderbilt. What does that mean for the Crimson Tide moving forward? And we'll also discuss some of the other games. Georgia dominates Kentucky. Can they bounce back in a big way this weekend against Auburn? We'll find out all of those questions and answers coming right back on the Bowden Blitz. Joe Lisi and Coach Bowden breaking down week 7 in the SEC. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. Keep it where it is. We'll be right back. Back on the Bowden Blitz, Joe Lisi and Coach Bowden breaking down week number six in the SEC. All eyes were on Tuscaloosa. Alabama entered the matchup against Vanderbilt as a 12.5-point favorite. Bettors bet it down to 9.5 before kickoff. We saw more money come in on the Crimson Tide. This line closed at right around 12 points for the 3:30 kick. Alabama was 40-1 straight up at home in Bryant Denny dating back to 2020. They started a little bit slow, Coach, but in the end, they get the win and cover by 16 points over Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I just think too much. The cards were stacked in Alabama's favor. Remember, they had all offseason to think about that Bandy loss. As tough a loss as they had at Alabama in a long time. And then they had to overcome an early loss this year against Florida State, and they're playing their best football. I thought the way they came out and aggressively, I thought they got after Vanderbilt, and they wanted to show their athleticism and their dominance physically. What happened to Vandy, it's kind of like Florida State. When your quarterback is your star, and he is your offense, and he's the guy that has to make things happen, when you hold him to 58 yards rushing, and then he turns the ball over three times, and two of them lead to 14 points, just like TC, Tommy Castellanos at Florida State, his two turnovers led 2 points. When he gives up 14 points himself with three turnovers and can't effectively run the football, you don't have a chance to upset an Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And that's kind of the case there. I still think if he doesn't turn the ball over and they play their best, they can beat Alabama. One out of ten. Not every day. Alabama, the better team, they got after it. And it all started with stopping that quarterback for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, too, is that you look at the success of Vanderbilt early. They hit a big run. That put them up 7-0, and then it was right. A back-and-forth affair potentially in the first half. Alabama did build a third and early fourth-quarter lead. Vanderbilt tried to respond. Critical third downs, they couldn't convert. Turnovers as well hurt Diego Pavia and the offense. But the one thing I think that when you just look at Alabama, they're calm, they're poised. Ty Simpson now in back-to-back weeks and big matchups is playing like the quarterback that they thought he would be at the start of the year. He's a Heisman Trophy frontrunner. He entered that game on Saturday afternoon, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was completing 69% of his passes. And when the game was on the line, he had ice in his veins. And, you know, Kalen DeBoer in Alabama, 4th-and-2. They were only winning by 9 points. They get the touchdown run to seal the deal. And, oh, by the way, get the cover laying 12 points at home. I think a lot of people were happy about that touchdown run. But they also showed a little bit of that killer instinct that many were sort of asking, was it there with the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, you know, when you become the head coach at Alabama, you got to know what those people think about every day of their lives. And so if you can beat the spread and you can win by the number that you're supposed to win to, you're an awful popular head coach. But I think Ty Simpson, he is the guy that's kind of solidified things here. He's the consummate quarterback at Alabama. You don't need to run like TC at FSU or Pavia. You've got to distribute the ball to the right people, manage, be smart, be a leader. He does everything like that. You know, his father is the head coach at UT Martin. He was raised around football. And I think he's the guy that we didn't know a lot about coming in. And now that we see him playing more and more, now he's getting the ball to Ryan Williams, the receivers. He's not turning the ball over. He's got great numbers throwing the football. And they're beginning to play great team football at Alabama. So credit to Alabama for playing the best overall football game. And Vanderbilt, when Pavia doesn't turn it over, he was good enough to lead them to victory. He's that good.
He is. And Vanderbilt's another team. They're going to face off against LSU in a couple of weeks. They could potentially not just play spoiler, but be an at-large team that may be the way Tennessee was last year entering against Ohio State. As long as they only have two losses, I think Vanderbilt potentially could be in the mix as an at-large team, and we'll see how it plays out the rest of the way. When you mentioned Ty Simpson, he completes 23 of 31, 340 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. Alabama, after their week one loss against Florida State, has now won, Coach, four straight, and they've won by an average margin of victory of 29 points per game. They're laying 3.5 on the road against Missouri, a very good Missouri team. Last question is, that front seven still in run support a little bit suspect. You think that potentially could be a weakness for this team second half of the regular season?
Yeah, I really think that's one of those statistics you can't afford to fall down in run support and run defense, because if a team can run on you, that means they can have short yardage third downs, they can pass on you, they can get in the red zone, they can control the clock. You've got to be able to stop that run, and we need to see better and better play. Now, they did play a very good offense, but Vanderbilt can put yardage on you. They have a very sophisticated, difficult-to-stop offensive scheme and style and that type of quarterback. But Alabama, again, to be a championship team, you got to be good on both sides of the ball. Defensively is the side that you want to be good every week, because offense, your quarterback can be off. You can turn the ball over. You can make mistakes. Defense needs to be there week in and week out.
Yeah, we'll see how they step up against Missouri. We'll break down that game a little bit later in the week. 3.5-point road favorites over the Missouri Tigers, and Ahmad Hardy, one of the best running backs in the conference. We'll break that down a little bit later in the week. The other matchup that took place in Athens, Georgia opened as a 20.5-point home favorite. We saw this line go down to 19.5 right before kickoff. Georgia built a huge first-half lead. They hold on and win it by margin, Coach. They win it by 21 points. 35-14, we saw Gunnar Stockton and that team make some plays in the passing attack. They were able to run the football when it mattered, and that defense shut down an inept Kentucky offense. I would say a complete effort for Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, they did exactly what they had to do, and at the end of the day, they won by just the amount of points they needed to win by to beat a comfortable win. Dominated a Kentucky team that's inconsistent at quarterback, don't have a great offense. I was very disappointed in their clock management right before the half. They gave up a chance to score points when they could have stayed in the game. They totally wasted the clock in the last 2 minutes of the first half with just poor clock management. That's an argument for a different day. But Georgia now has got themselves on a roll.
And when we come back, we'll break down the battle in Texas A&M, College Station. A&M beats up on Mississippi State, and we'll talk Red River rivalry coming up next. Wrapping up our recaps of week number 6, the battle in College Station between Texas A&M and Mississippi State. Mississippi State entered this matchup, Coach, with only one loss. It came the week prior against Tennessee. They lost the matchup, but covered as a 7.5-point underdog against the Volunteers. They dropped that game 41-34. We saw this line open at 14.5 in favor of Marcel Reed and the Aggies right before kick. This line ballooned to 17.5. Texas A&M answered the bell. They win it dominating style, 31-9. They get the winning cover against a previous very good blue-collar team in Mississippi State. Complete effort on both sides of the ball for Mike Elko and the Aggies.
Well, I took those points hook, line, and sinker. I was jumping on it all over the place. But you know what? Texas A&M, again, played great defense. This was a 7-3 game at halftime, 14-3 into the fourth quarter. But Texas A&M has held their last two teams, Auburn and Mississippi State. They've held them to 1-23 on third downs. They are getting teams off the field. And then what they did, they just gradually added points, added points, added points. And I said this earlier, I think maybe Texas A&M, maybe one of the most complete teams in the country, definitely in the SEC, because of the weapons they have on offense with two receivers, Concepcion and Craver, and then two good running backs, of course, Le'Veon Moss, and a quarterback that's a dual threat. These guys can do it on offense, but when they don't put a lot of points up there, and this game they put them up there toward the end of the game, their defense can shut you down.
They can, and I think that's the biggest question mark that we had, is that when they won games in the early part of the season, you can include that victory in South Bend against Notre Dame.
Right.
They were 6.5-point dogs. They were only 1-3 against the number at that particular time. Their defense was still giving up yards. Their defense was still giving up points to lesser and more inferior opponents, right? Now against Auburn, a blue-collar team, they hold that offense and Jackson Arnold to your point of 10 points. This was a red-hot Mississippi offense led by Blake Shapen. To hold them to 9 points and to your point, to have 1 of 23 on third down conversions is a phenomenal effort. If they can continue to play like that against DJ Lagway in Florida this week, but big picture, maybe if they do match up against Alabama, they could go toe-to-toe with anybody now in the conference, and that includes Georgia and some of the likes of potentially LSU, whoever's going to be in their way, they could step up.
Well, and that was the point I was trying to make. When they have to score offensively, they've got the weapons to do it. And when they have to shut you down defensively, they've shown that they can do it. They've got the strength to play out there on both sides of the football. We haven't seen that from some of the teams that were supposed to be good. That's why Texas A&M now is slowly creeping up to one of those odds in the SEC. They're getting closer to those top three teams for chances to win the conference championship.
Yeah, we'll see if they can do it. You know, Texas A&M, 7.5-point home favorites over Florida. Yep. We'll break that game down a little bit later in the week. But when you we'll break it down now. Why not? 7.5-point home favorites against Florida. Early look right now, Coach. The way A&M is playing, they could put a lot of pressure on DJ Lagway. I guess the biggest question, if you're going to take Florida, we know their defense is going to bring it. Could the offense duplicate what we saw at home in the Swamp?
I think you've got to bet on the DJ Lagway. Is he going to come out there and give you that dynamic performance? He's got him a new receiver, a young freshman that's making big plays for him. You know what? Last year when he got going, he got going. So right now I haven't made my mind up, but I am kind of leaning for Florida keeping that thing on a roll and see if something if Texas A&M stumbles their toe here.
SEC's oldest rivalry, as you know, you've played in this rivalry. Some fantastic finishes. Georgia now a 4.5-point road favorite over Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers, searching for answers. Not one win in the conference, and Georgia seems to be bouncing back in a positive way. Early on thoughts about the Bulldogs and Tigers squaring off on the Plains.
Well, this game was first played in 1893. It's the oldest rivalry in the South. I played in the 100th anniversary, 1993, my first year there. We beat Georgia between our hedges. You know, they play between the hedges. We play between the sticker bushes at Auburn. But you know what? Auburn's a one-dimensional team. They are not. They are playing outstanding defense, but they have had no offense. Their quarterback is holding on to the ball a little too much. He's taking a lot of sacks. Penalties, missed assignments, tackles for loss. They've had an off week, and we got to hope they did some things with their offense if they're going to stay with Georgia. Yes, they can play defense, but they've got to do something offensively. Night game in Auburn, one of the toughest places to play in the world. They love playing Georgia in a night game at home. The Bulldogs better be ready.
No, we'll break down that game and the Red River rivalry next in later in the week right here on the Bowden Bits. Keep it where it is.